And today I will talk about non-planar scattering amplitudes. And it's a work with a number of people, including Freddy in the audience, and also some more recent work on gravity amplitudes. So the first part will be about Young-Mills amplitudes, and then also to say something about gravity. And the goal of this effort is to take some of the mathematical structures we saw in the n equals 4 super Young-Mills in the planar limit, on-shell diagrams, and also amplitudohedron, and to see if can extend possibly, or how does it look like in other theories. And in the first step, it will be to see, the first goal is to see how it extends to the non-planar, or the full complete n equals 4 super Young-Mills theory, and then also what we can say about gravity theory. And the natural candidate is the maximal supergravity in four dimensions. So the plan of the talk is to review some of the features of on-shell diagrams and amplitude in planar n equals 4, then to see how it extends beyond planar limit, and then finally talk about n equals 8 supergravity. Now, in this talk, I'm interested in scattering amplitudes of massless particles in four dimensions. I will work in the perturbation theory. So in the background, there is some expansion in terms of Feynman diagrams for scattering amplitudes. And the final amplitude, we can think about it as a sum of Feynman diagrams at tree level, just directly the rational function that corresponds to it. At loop level, it's a sum of integrals given by the Feynman diagrams. But I will also talk the central objects, at least for the planar part, will be the integrand of the amplitude is once we sum all the Feynman diagrams contributing and talk about just a single function, then it's supposed to be integrated over the loop momenta. The general idea in this way of thinking about scattering amplitudes is that the amplitude is fixed as a function from its singularities, that knowing where the function blows up is enough to reconstruct the function completely. And this can be in principle done also for the final amplitude. But there, because the functional space at the loop level is very complicated and we don't exactly know where the singularities are and what it means, what the given singularity means for the actual function to appear, it's much easier to talk about the integrand, the function prior to integration, because it's just the rational function of kinematics. And we know all what are all the singularities just from the first principles. Also, this function doesn't have any divergences. All the IR and UV divergences show up after we integrate it. And in the cases of our interest, there will be also some hidden symmetries of the integrand and some new mathematical structures, which presumably can be also seen after integration, but it's much less clear how it looks like. And but there is evidence for it that these things extend. Now, the integrand, because it's built just from the Feynman diagrams, all the poles in these functions are just 1 over p square, where p is the sum of external and internal momenta. And these all poles are physical, so there are no, and the presence of these poles just corresponds to the locality of the interaction. The fact that the particles interact point-like in the position space corresponds to these types of poles in the momentum space. And now on these poles, the integrand factorizes, and that's dictated by unitarity. In either factorizes into the product of two subamplitudes, or in the case of the, or in some other case when the pole that we are approaching, it contains loop momenta, it gives something called forward limit term, which is well defined only in certain theories. So what is more familiar textbook factorization is so-called unitarity cut, when we set two of the propagators to zero in this picture, and then the amplitude again factorizes into two pieces. So this is the content of unitarity in the scattering amplitudes. Now, in the standard way of how to express the amplitude beyond the Feynman diagrams, uses the methods of unitarity or generalized unitarity. And that means to write the amplitude in some basis of integrals and then fix the coefficients. So these are some integrals. So integrals, in principle, we know how to integrate. So we choose some basis. And the coefficients are then given by cuts. And the cut means sending the propagators to zero on the left-hand side and right-hand side. On the right-hand side, it just calculates some residues of the integrals we know. And on the left-hand side, this means the iterative use of this unitarity cut, or the tree-level factorization, until more propagators are sent to zero, and the final picture, the final loop amplitude, factorizes into product of trees. This is the content of the generalized unitarity. So for example, this is a case of some two-loop amplitude. After you set these 8 propagators to zero that you see on this picture, all these propagators are now on shell, then the two-loop amplitude, the residue of the two-loop amplitude on this cut is the product of trees. Then we can continue this factorization procedure until, because we can also take this tree and calculate the residue again on in another pole where the tree factorizes into the product of another trees, and we can continue until all the vertices in this picture are just 3-point amplitudes, and then we get on-shell diagrams, which I discuss in the moment. Now, this picture of factorization can be also was used to build the tree-level amplitude using recursion relations by Freddy and his collaborators in 2005, when the idea is to take the amplitude and perform a complex momentum shift, and then exactly exploit the fact that the tree-level amplitude factorizes into the product of two trees on the factorization channel, and basically integrate this equation to get the amplitude directly, not only on factorization channel, but for generic kinematics. And this approach is extremely efficient in the number of terms. This is just some comparison of number of terms in Feynman diagrams approach and in the recursion relations. And the BCFW recursion relations is something that will exactly give us the amplitude in terms of these on-shell diagrams I will discuss in a moment. Now, I'm not going to talk about on-shell diagrams in complete generality, but I will focus in the first part on a special theory, which is n equals 4 superangles in the planar limit, and then I go also beyond the planar limit and to gravity. But the first motivation comes from this theory, and the reason why this is an interesting theory, among other things, it's a good toy model for QCD, especially in the view of amplitudes, because the tree-level amplitudes in this theory are the same as tree-level amplitudes of massless particles in QCD, tree-level amplitudes of gluons in QCD. And also the perturbation theory the perturbative series in planar n equals 4 superangles is actually convergent series. There is no confinement, no instantons, no normalons. The full series is convergent with finite radius of convergence in the planar limit of n equals 4. And there are hidden symmetries in the theory I will briefly discuss also. And the other reason why this is a good toy model is that in the past, the new methods for amplitudes actually originated here, and they were used for other theories. So this is a good starting point. And planar n equals 4 is actually a very good playground for many theoretical ideas concerning amplitudes, but not only scattering amplitudes. But for amplitudes, there are different approaches, including DOP expansion, and by Pedro and his collaborators, hexagon bootstrap by Matt, Lance Dixon and collaborators, and symbols, we will hear the related talk in the afternoon by Mark, and many more. So I'm not going to list them all of them here. Now, one thing from the point of view of integrand of amplitudes is important in the planar limit is the presence of global variables in scattering amplitudes. In this standard unitarity approach, if we want to expand the amplitude in terms of diagrams, then each diagram has its own variable. What the loop momentum means in individual diagrams is just different, and there is no way how to line them together. But if we are in the planar limit and only planar diagrams contribute, there actually exists a way how to associate the loop momentum not with edges, but with vertices of the diagram. And this goes, and then this is then related to the dual variables. It's some sort of position variables for the momenta, and these variables are global. So in all diagrams, we can line up the variables in one diagram with the variables in the other diagram, and then it allows us to sum everything together and get just a single function. And this single function is the integrand of the amplitude. And now we don't think about it anymore in terms of diagrams or any other expansion. It's just a single function then which is supposed to be then integrated over now some dual loop momenta. Now, this function integrand and also the three-level amplitude have some hidden symmetry in the planar n equals 4. And this is a dual conformal symmetry. So in these dual variables, there is a new conformal symmetry acting on these variables, and the integrand and three-level amplitude are invariant under this symmetry. So there is a normal conformal symmetry in n equals 4 super Young Mills, but there is also another conformal symmetry which doesn't act in the position space, but acts on these dual variables which are related to the momenta. So basically acts in the momentum space. And these two symmetries talk to each other and they build the Youngian symmetry. So there is a Youngian symmetry, infinite dimensional symmetry in scattering amplitudes in planar n equals 4. By amplitudes, I here mean integrand or three-level amplitudes, because the amplitudes after we integrate and get the final expression, there are IR divergences and they break, of course, the conformal symmetry and also the dual conformal symmetry. So the symmetries are broken, but there are some attempts how to restore these symmetries even after integration. So now let me talk about on-shell diagrams. And so in the I mentioned this word on-shell diagrams in the context of taking cuts of the amplitude until everything is cut, all the possible propagators are cut, and everything which is left are just three-point amplitudes in the corners of these diagrams. But now let me build it in the exactly opposite way. And we start with the three-point amplitudes, now in any quantum field theory in principle. So it's very useful because we are talking about massless particles to change the variables from the momenta to so-called spinner helicity variables, which just means that the four momentum is expressed using two spinners, the dotted and undotted spinners, and then there are some natural SL2 invariants of these two types of spinners, which look like that. Now, if we want to solve these conditions, which is just the massless condition and the momentum conservation in the three-point kinematics, we get that either all these lambda spinners are proportional or all these lambda tilde spinners are proportional. So I dot it like this white or this black or blue dot. Now, if we talk about real momenta, there is a reality condition on these lambda and lambda tilde, which means that the complex conjugate of these lambda spinners is the lambda tilde spinner. So from that you can see that if you insist on having three-point momentum conservation and the momenta being real, then if this condition is satisfied, this condition must be also satisfied. And in the end, you get that there are no real momenta which satisfy momentum conservation and the on-shell conditions. So there are no free real momenta satisfying that, but if you work with the complex momenta, then everything is fine and you have two options. So generally, if we talk about three-point amplitude, we mean three-point amplitudes for the complex momenta, not only real momenta. For real momenta, it's zero. There is no decaying of one massless particle into two other massless particles. And these three-point complex amplitudes are fixed just by Lorentz symmetry to all loop orders in the perturbation theory in any quantum field theory. It's just the formula is just given by the weights, the mass weights, and the transformation according to the Lorentz group. Because, well, the reason why it doesn't get corrected at loop level is because there are no three-point invariants, or SIJs are zero, so there are no arguments that can run into the locks, and so on. So the coupling constants can get corrected, so but not in a way which depends on kinematics. Now, in n equals 4 super Young Mills, this is the way how these two three-point amplitudes look like. So I will not dig into more into details, but there is momentum conservation, and there is also something called supermomentum conservation in this case and in this case. And these eta tildes are just the fermionic variables in the expansion of the superfield in terms of component fields. So these are the expressions which you get for the free point amplitudes in n equals 4 superangles, for the super amplitudes. And in one case, it corresponds to this solution to the momentum conservation when the lambdas are proportional. Therefore, everything now here depends on lambda tilde. And here, it's exactly the opposite. So these are the expressions for these two elementary three-point amplitudes. Now, the thing that we will do is to take this as building blocks, these three-point amplitudes, and glue them together into more complicated diagrams. And this diagram, the meaning of this diagram, is just the product of the three-point amplitudes in the vertices. And then this is a more and more complicated graph. You can draw any graphs you want. In this graph, every leg is on shell. The internal leg and external legs, everything is on shell. Therefore, these are not Feynman diagrams. Everything is here on shell. So for example, in this case, this is just a rational function of external kinematics. In particular, it's a 4.3 level amplitude because in principle, there is a loop momentum flowing here, but we impose four on-shell conditions, which fixes all 4 degrees of freedom in the loop momenta, and you get just the rational function. And these diagrams, built as the product of three-point amplitudes, also represents the cuts of the loop integrand. So this is a quadruple cut or four cut of the one loop integrand. This is an eight cut of the two loop integrand, and so on. Because this is the pictures you get when you take the loop amplitude and calculate on the residue when the internal legs are on shell. And what you can get is either, like in this first example, this is a function which has some extra delta function associated with it. So this is a rational function with extra delta function. Because this is just factorization of 4.3 level amplitude, we are also imposing that S12, the S is equal to 0. There are two ways how to do it. Either say that 1,2 angle bracket or 1,2 square bracket is to 0. This is one of the options. The other option is that the thing is just actually the rational function with no extra delta functions, like this picture, which is just the 4.3 level amplitude. But the other on-shell diagram can also give us some unfixed parameters. Yeah, here you can count the number of propagators. Here there are 7 propagators, but there were 2 loop momenta that we cut it. So there is 1 degree of freedom left. So there is some one extra parameter z left, which is unfixed. Now these diagrams, not only that they represent the cuts of loop integrands, but they can be also used using recursion relations to build the loop integrand itself. And this is done using BCFW recursion relations for the tree level and generalization of that to the loop level in planar n equals 4 superangles. The tree level recursion, of course, is much more general, but for the loop integrand, we know how to do it at the moment only for planar n equals 4, despite there is some there is some recent progress on the planar QCD as well. And this is an example what the recursion gives us. So in the simplest case of the loop amplitude, which is 4.1 loop, the on-shell diagram that contributes looks like that. So it's a 5-loop on-shell diagram. It has 4 degrees of freedom left, which can be associated with the 4 components of the loop momenta. So in the end, this is algebraically equal to the 1-loop off-shell box integral. These things are equal algebraically. But the way how it's represented, it's in a very different, it's a very different setup. And in more complicated cases, it's not only one diagram that contributes, but of course, more diagrams. Now, there is a deep connection between these diagrams as the product of three-point amplitudes and the Grassmannian. And there is a different ways how to motivate the story, but I think the most instructive motivation is following. And it's more thinking more seriously about momentum conservation. So the momentum conservation is a simple condition in terms of loop moment, in terms of momenta. The problem is that the momenta don't make the on-shell conditions trivial, because we use the 4-component momentum P, but the fact that the P square is 0 is obscure. So if we use these spinner helicity variables, now we make manifest that the P square is 0, just by definition. But now the momentum conservation, here being a linear condition, is now a quadratic condition in these lambda and lambda tilde. It's a very complicated condition. So it's natural to ask, can we factorize this delta function into 2 delta functions, one for lambda tilde only and the other for lambda only, with some matrices C and D of the coefficients? And this is exactly what leads to the Grassmannian. So in the end, we get some relations between these lambda tilde. It's K relations, and there are n of these lambda tildes. So this is metric. This is a K by n matrix of coefficients. And in fact, this K by n matrix represents a K-plane in n dimension. It's just the Grassmannian GKN. And we can see that in order to reproduce the momentum conservation, the other matrix D must be the orthogonal to this matrix C. Now, this matrix C has many free parameters. There are many ways how to linearize this quadratic momentum conservation. But each on-shell diagram gives us explicit parametrization of this C matrix, and also this C perp matrix as well. In particular, there exists a way how to take the diagram and get the matrix C directly from the diagram. For that, we have to associate some variables, either with faces of the diagram or with edges of the diagram. And now there are some rules how to build a C matrix using the variables of the diagram associated with either faces or edges. The way how to do it is first you use something called perfect orientation when you add arrows to the edges of the diagram. For the white vertex, there is one arrow in and two out. And for the black or blue vertex, two arrows in and one out. And then in each vertex, you are allowed to fix one of the variables to be equal to one or any number you want, and then leave the other ones. And then the entries of the matrix are given from all, summing over all the path from the arrows that go into the diagram to the arrows that go from the diagram. So for example, entry 1, 4 is given by all the paths between 1 and 4, but the only path here which is allowed is this path. So there is alpha 4, and then there is also some sign. There is some rule for the sign. Okay, so this is a matrix that you do, which linearizes the momentum conservation here. And there is also a part, which I will not discuss in this talk, is that if these variables, in principle, they are complex, but if you say that they are real and positive, then all the minors of this matrix, all the main k by k minors, in this case 2 by 2, are also positive. So this is not only Grassmannian, but it's so-called positive Grassmannian. And there is some very interesting connection to algebraic geometry and combinatorics related to the stratification of the space of Grassmannians, and it's closely connected to these on-shell diagrams. The important thing for me is that now, once I have this C matrix and these variables, I can calculate the function given by the product of three-point amplitudes using a simple logarithmic form. So it's a form d alpha over alpha in all variables of the diagram with some delta functions. And the delta functions are just these delta functions which linearize the momentum conservation. And then in n equals 4 supertriangles, there is also some super delta function. Now, these delta functions localize the alpha, solve for alphas, these variables, in terms of lambda and lambda tilde, which gives us not only the momentum conservation and also the supermomentum conservation, but also calculates for all these alphas. So it's a differential form, but calculated against the delta function, so that this is even up, and the result in this case is just a rational function, and it's equal to the four-point amplitude. It's the same thing we would get from gluing together three-point amplitudes in this picture. In general, it's a form, so you can have some free variables or some extra delta functions. The same thing as with the on-shell diagrams, how I defined them before using three-point amplitudes. Now, the relations to the symmetries of the theory is that each on-shell diagram has this dual conformal symmetry and also the Jungian symmetry, just term by term. And so we know that it's true for the amplitudes, but the on-shell diagrams is a way how to make it manifest term by term. There is also some special thing which is not obvious using any other construction, is that all the singularities are logarithmic, which was exactly C here. So whenever you go to the singularity where alpha is going to zero, it behaves like d alpha over alpha. This is more than just saying that all the poles are linear poles, because you can do the second, third, fourth singularity and you always find just d alpha over alpha. So there is some special singularity structure in the scattering amplitudes in planar n equals 4, which is obvious from on-shell diagrams, but not we don't know how to derive them from some first principles. And the interesting part is also that all the dependence on kinematics is pushed exactly into the delta function. So it's the momentum conservation, which only brings us the kinematics. Yeah, this part doesn't depend on kinematics. It just depends on the parametrization of the diagram. So all the kinematics is pushed into the delta functions. And but if we want to use these on-shell diagrams to get the actual amplitude, we have to use recursion relations. So despite the story about the diagrams, doesn't contain any kinematics except the momentum conservation, and everything is pushed into this Grassmannian space. The way how to get the amplitude is to use recursion relations. But there exists a more complete geometric picture, which I will not discuss in the talk more, called amplituhedron, and that kind of connects all these on-shell diagrams together into a single object. And the motivation for that is the polytop picture by Andrew Hodges from 2009, who realized that certain amplitudes in n equals 4 super Young Mills can be actually thought as volumes of polyhedra. And the different recursion relations, how to obtain these amplitudes, just chops the polyhedra into different set of tetrahedra. And this can be generalized to the Grassmannian, and that's exactly what gives the amplituhedron. And the thing which is then true for individual on-shell diagrams is now the defining property of what we mean here, the volume. The volume is the logarithmic form of this type, where these axes are just some parameters, parametrizing the amplituhedron or the generalization of the Grassmannian space that enters that. But again, all the singularities here are logarithmic, which is something we could see from the on-shell diagrams, and it enters the definition of the amplituhedron. Now, let me summarize some of the properties. So if you forget the part of the geometric story and just focus on the final result of the loop integrand, there are certain properties that follow from this picture, and that I will try to generalize beyond the planar limit and then see how it also behaves in the supergravity. Now, one important property is the absence of poles at infinity. So if you cut these propagators L square, then the L as the loop momenta gets localized to some position in the complex momentum space. Now, the thing that never happens is that the residue is localized at L goes to infinity. This is exactly related to the presence of the dual conformal symmetry in planar n equals 4 super Young Mills, and also linked to the good UV behavior. But this is actually stronger than just the UV, the fact that the amplitudes are UV finite in this theory. The example when you would have a pole at infinity is a bubble integral of that form. Here you can see that you can directly set L to infinity and you just get a pole at L goes to infinity. But sometimes the poles at infinity are more hidden, like in the example of the triangle integral of that form, just the one loop triangle. Then you would have to cut these three propagators, and then you would find that the loop momentum L is parameterized like alpha lambda 1 lambda 2 tilde. Well, this is not important. There is alpha that parametrizes L, and the form becomes d alpha over alpha. So this is a pole at alpha goes to infinity, and there is a pole at infinity, despite actually this integral is UV finite. So this never happens in planar n equals 4. It's a consequence of dual conformal symmetry, and it's also inherited in these on-shell diagrams as well as amplituhedron. So the other thing that I already discussed before are logarithmic singularities. It's a statement about the type of singularities you get in the cuts, and it's linked to the transcendentality of the functions you get after you would integrate this integrand. And just to demonstrate that this is a more than just single pole, is that we can consider this form, dx dy over xy x plus y. This doesn't have any double poles, but if you calculate the residue x is 0, this becomes dy over y square, and this has a double pole. So this will also never happen in planar n equals 4. But here, x and y can parameterize the loop momenta, for example, on some cuts. And also, certain integrals can be put in to this form. It's not only the amplitude. And we call that D-log form when you choose, if you change the variables from the loop momenta to some other, so functions of the loop momenta such that this makes the property manifest. And this is exactly how the on-shell diagrams that's the on-shell diagram representation of the amplitude would be exactly using the functions like that. Okay, so this was about planar n equals 4. And let me say to which extent these things generalize beyond the planar limit. In the planar n equals 4, because there is this Jungian symmetry, there is this integrability structure, there might be special things we might expect to happen. But beyond the planar limit, apart from maximal supersymmetry and conformal symmetry, we don't know about any other hidden symmetries or some structures. So naively, all these things I said should be gone, but we will see that it's not the case. Now, talking about the loop amplitudes in general, the problem is with these labels. So in the planar limit, when only planar integrals contribute, there was this global variable that can be used for different parts of the amplitude and talk about a single integrand. But in this case, there is no unique L we can identify. So even in the simplest case of the one loop amplitudes, there are three diagrams contributing. There is no way how to choose L in different diagrams such that they would line up and we can sum them together. There is no dual conformal symmetry or other symmetries, but we can still talk about on-shell diagrams, and these are cuts of the amplitude or non-planar gluing together of the three-point amplitudes. We don't have any recursion relations how to build the amplitudes from them, but these objects still make sense as the cuts of the loop amplitudes. And in addition, because there is also a connection to the Grassmannian, now not the positive Grassmannian, but just from the picture of gluing together three-point amplitudes, we would also land on the Grassmannian form, and the arguments about the momentum conservation also applies linearizing. We would find exactly the same form as in the planar case. So the singularities here are, again, logarithmic. So it's a natural conjecture that if there exists recursion relations using these diagrams, so if the amplitude can be expressed in some sense using these diagrams, then the singularities of the amplitude also, all the singularities should be logarithmic. So the same thing that happened in the planar sector should also happen here. And there is actually some indirect evidence for it, but then I will show some direct evidence. If you look at the simple the simple on-shell diagrams, which are so-called leading singularities, these are only functions of external momenta. In the planar case, they are all just these simple products of these brackets, also called Park-Taylor factors, because they are three-level MHV amplitudes for certain three-level amplitudes for certain helicity combinations, and this is required just by the superconformal symmetry. In the non-planar case, these amplitudes have a little more complicated structure naively if you just straight calculate it, but in the end, they can be also expressed as linear combination of the planar diagrams with different orderings of legs. So here there is some ordering 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, which you can see here, but here the function for that is a linear combination by the same factors with different orderings. So here, from this point of view, the non-planar diagrams are similar to planar. So if there are logarithmic singularities here, there are logarithmic singularities here. There are no poles at infinity in these diagrams, and because this is related to these ones, just by linear combinations, there are also no poles at infinity in these diagrams. So despite we don't have unique integrand, no recursion relations, and the on-shell diagrams don't give us amplitudes but only cuts of the amplitudes, we can still conjecture that the amplitudes themselves, not just their cuts, have only logarithmic singularities and no poles at infinity. The logarithmic singularities are closely related to these geometric constructions, to volumes and amplituhedra, and no poles at infinity are related to new symmetries. In the planar n equals 4, it's this dual conformal symmetry. We don't know about any of such symmetries in N equals 4, but this is what this check would suggest if it works. Now, we don't have any other better expansion of the amplitude than to use the standard expansion using diagrams. So the amplitude is a sum of diagrams with some color factors and some prefactors. And we construct the basis of these integrals with term by term, having satisfying these special properties. So there will be some basis of integrals. Some of the integrals like this one will be forbidden because it doesn't satisfy. There is no numerator or no way how to repair this integral to satisfy these properties. So this is some particular checks at two loop and three loop, finding the basis of integrals with these properties. And we expand the amplitude. And the important thing is that the amplitude can be expanded in terms of the integrals with these special properties. And this means that the full amplitude has, indeed, only logarithmic singularities and no poles at infinity. Moreover, the only cuts that we use are the cuts where the amplitude vanishes. There is the standard unitarity methods use the cut of the amplitude when the right-hand side is the product of three-level amplitudes. This is how the unitarity methods were developed. But we restrict ourselves here to only cuts where the amplitude vanishes. There is a relation to the planar, the amplitudehedron conjecture, which exactly tells us that this is the only relevant cuts. The whole picture is in some sense homogeneous. You don't need any extra information to throw in. Just saying where the full amplitude vanishes is enough to tell us what the object is, up to some overall constant. And if we take this conjecture and we check it, it again works for the cases we checked. And this is just an example how it works. Even at two loop, there are two different coefficients in front of the planar integral and the non-planar ones. Then you use certain cut, which vanishes, and you relate these two coefficients together. So here, the non-planar conclusion is that at the level of amplitudes, the same structure which is there in planar seems to be there also non-planar. And we can talk about the complete N equals 4 super-Yang-Mills theory as being the simplest quantum field theory for the purpose of scattering amplitudes. Now, the open question here is, because we don't know how these observations formulate as new symmetries, and then we were also kind of ignorant to the role of color factors, which should be very important in this story. But this definitely gives some predictions to the final amplitudes, not just the integrant, that the full N equals 4 super Yang-Mills amplitude should have uniform transcendentality, and then there should be some interesting structure in the cross ratios of these amplitudes. Okay, so finally I will talk about what insight from the Yang-Mills we can now obtain when we look at the gravity amplitudes. Now, the three-point amplitudes in gravity are actually related directly. The three-point amplitude in gravity for some particular helicity configuration is just the square of the Yang-Mills amplitude. So in many contexts, we have this statement that the gravity is a square of Yang-Mills. At the level of three-point amplitude, it's literally squaring. Now, for the generic on-shell diagram, it's not directly squaring. The relation is that the gravity times phi cube, where the phi cube three-point amplitude is just 1, is equal to the Yang-Mills square. The problem is that this phi cube part changes dramatically the expressions that we get here. So we cannot directly take the Yang-Mills expressions and write the gravity expressions and study them. They have very different structure. But let's just look at some data to see how the different expressions might look like and then make some conjectures. So the simplest class of on-shell diagrams are so-called MHV leading singularities. These are MHV here stands for maximal helicity violating. It's the simplest helicity configuration of pluses and minuses that is still non-vanishing. And the leading singularities are just functions which directly give us rational functions of external kinematics. So number of on-shell conditions is exactly equal to 4L, where L is the number of loop momenta. So for the young Mills, this diagram was equal to the 4.3 level amplitude, which looks like that. And for gravity, if we just straight calculate it, we get expressions like that. We can do more complicated diagram. On the young Mills side, we again get such a simple expression. The gravity side, we get a little different expression. So similarly, for this non-planar now diagram, and so on. But if you look at the types of expressions you get on the gravity side, you could directly make a conjecture that all the on-shell diagrams in this class look like some anti-holomorphic brackets in the numerator all over these types of brackets in the denominator, and all are single poles. So that would be the conjecture, and from that you can continue. But if you look at more complicated diagrams, you directly see that this is violated for more complicated cases. Not only that you can get higher poles, but the numerators also can get more complicated. So more detailed analysis is needed to see what is special about these expressions, and then we can say something about them. Now, the first thing, what you realize, is that these higher poles all corresponds to the poles at infinity, something which was absent in the Young-Mills case. So when you set this guy to zero, there is something in the diagram, in this case, this loop momentum flowing here, which is now located at infinity. It goes to infinity. These poles were absent in the Young-Mills, but now are present in the gravity. From the other point of view, if you look at the numerator, each numerator factor corresponds to one vertex. And the numerator factor vanishes whenever free momenta in a given vertex are collinear. So there is some collinearity condition which tells us when the diagram actually vanishes. This is also something very different from Young-Mills, where the vanishing of the diagram didn't make any sense, or there was no special kinematics for that. So the thing we can do is to take the same diagram, the same Grassmannian matrix we got in the Young-Mills case. Now, these things stay the same. The thing which changes is this form. So using these parameters of the C matrix, we want to, again, linearize the momentum conservation that we can do. But this form, which was logarithmic before, changes in the gravity case. And it's not logarithmic anymore. It has actually third powers of the alpha in the denominator. And for each vertex of the diagram, it has some factor in the numerator. So the form is different. It was logarithmic. It was this simple logarithmic form in the Young-Mills case. And in the gravity case, there are higher poles and also numerator factors. But the fact that you can find this form, and it's the same for all on-shell diagrams, is a very non-trivial property, because in principle, you can think that each on-shell diagram has completely different form in terms of these variables, and there is no unique general form how it looks like, but it exists. Now, if you analyze now this form, as I said, there are higher poles present, but you can easily see that this reduces to single poles whenever this pole alpha goes to zero actually corresponds to taking the residue at finite L, where the loop momentum is finite. If it goes to infinity, you can have multiple poles. And the diagram vanishes, as I said, just based on the previous observation, but now it's also inherited in this form. It vanishes whenever in any vertex three of the momenta are collinear. Then the full diagram vanishes. And the similar formula is there for n less than 8 supergravity. It's actually very similar. We have the formula we had for n equals 4 super Young-Mills. There exists an extension to lower number of supersymmetries. In the same sense, there is an extension to lower number of supersymmetries in supergravity. So therefore, the n equals 8 supergravity is like the base form now for all gravity, for the on-shell diagrams in any gravity amplitude. Now, knowing how these on-shell diagrams for gravity look like, that means knowing how the cuts of the loop, of the gravity loop amplitudes look like, we can actually look at the properties of the gravity amplitudes directly. So again, we don't have any recursion relations using on-shell diagrams. We don't have any global variables. It's a generic problem of non-planar theories. It has nothing to do with Young-Mills on gravity or anything else. Whenever we have non-planar, we don't really know how to put pieces together. But there is an extra problem here, which is that unlike the Young-Mills coupling, the coupling in gravity is dimension 4. And if actually the recursion relations exist, which they do in the case of tree-level amplitudes, there are some extra kinematical factors going from on-shell diagrams like that to amplitudes, either tree-level or hypothetically loop-level, if we know how to do it. So there are two levels of complication. Now, we can still make conjectures about the properties of the final amplitude, despite we know only about these on-shell diagrams in details. And the conjectures can be made about collinearity conditions and the poles at finite locations. So that corresponds to IR, and also to about poles at infinity, which corresponds to the UB. It seems the thing that we understand at the moment is this IR part. The UV part, the thing which is there, are the only statement we have is that the poles at infinity are just there. So if it corresponds to the UV divergence or not, that's an open problem. So first, the finite poles. So the on-shell diagram tells us that all finite cuts are logarithmic. So if we take the integral corresponding, or if we take the full gravity amplitude and we do the cuts, cut, 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 we never get the alpha over alpha square, where alpha goes to 0 would correspond to L is finite, not infinity. This never happens. And we can actually derive it assuming that something which is called BCJ relations hold, which tells us that if we write the Young-Mills amplitude in a special way, where it's terms of skeleton diagrams, numerator times scalar factor over denominator, this is a sequence of poles, then we can just replace the color part by, again, the numerator part and get the gravity amplitude. There is some extended conjecture which tells us that this C can be replaced by any representation, doesn't have to be this BCJ representation, by any representation of the Young-Mills amplitude, and that we can exactly do. So this is a gravity representation using Young-Mills building blocks, which makes manifest that this never happens, because this, in addition to just the Young-Mills part, we are adding something to numerator which doesn't have any denominator factor. So if this was true for Young-Mills, this is definitely also true for gravity. So there is some argument from these BCJ relations. I don't want to spend much time talking about them. And I would say that it's certainly correct, almost certainly correct statement. There are some interesting implications to, it gives some constraints or what are the critical dimensions of N equals fate supergravity, but it doesn't resolve the problem of UV finiteness. But for example, at two loop, there might be this diagram which shows up in the expansion of the two-loop four-point amplitude in terms of diagrams. And this diagram actually and its generalization diverges in the critical dimension 4 plus 4 over L. While both n equals 4 and n equals 8 supergravity, at least up to four loops, diverge in 4 plus 6 over L. So these diagrams should be present. The problem is that this diagram exactly has a double pole in the cut structure. And we know that it's not there in Young-Mills, and by conjecture, it shouldn't be there now in the gravity using that argument I said. And it's indeed, it's not there. Despite the argument why it's not there, it's very different from this one, the standard argument. Now, what seems more interesting to me is this condition about where the amplitude, where the on-shell diagram and correspondingly where the amplitude vanishes. So if I have an on-shell diagram and I consider now not just on-shell diagram, but any cut of the amplitude on, of this form when I set three legs on shell, L1, L2, and L3. Now, depending which solution to the three-point kinematics I choose, the cut of the amplitude should produce this factor in the numerator, or this factor. This is a special case of the special case of that is the collinear limit when these L1 and L2 are actually external momenta. But here, the on-chain diagram numerators for gravity suggest that this is true even if L1, L2, and L3 are loop momenta. And we can actually test it. So the first thing to test it is even at one loop 4 point, then if you set two propagators to zero, L and L minus P1, the conjecture is that the full amplitude generates L1 in the numerator. However, if you look at the expansion of the amplitude in terms of boxes, there are three box integrals. Each box scales like 1 over L1. Now, if you sum it, now it scales like 1. The pole goes away. This is still not the thing we conjectured based on the on-chain diagrams. However, in taking these three boxes, we made some choices about what L is. There is L here and L minus P1 here. We could also flip these labels. If we flip these labels and sum it, we indeed get the factor we wanted. So there is some special thing about symmetrization of these integrands. And there is some non-trivial cancellation between different diagrams, even in simple cases like that. And there is a close connection to IR singularities of gravity. So indeed, this property is kind of the integrand statement that the IR singularities of gravity are weaker, are very weak. But this seems to go actually farther than that. But yeah, I don't have more things to say. Now, finally, as I said, the most important thing we actually don't know yet is what is special about poles at infinity. Even at, so everything starts at free loop. When we consider on-chain diagram of that form, this is certain cut of the free loop 4-point amplitude, and in the last variable dz, it goes like dz over z, and there is a pole z goes to infinity, which says L goes to infinity. So there are, and at higher loops, there are higher poles. But the relation to UV is unclear, so we need to understand how these, what these poles at infinity are. They are definitely present, but if there is something special in them, we don't know. Okay. Come to the conclusion. So we studied on-chain diagrams for gravity and the non-planar n equals 4 superyagnals. There are Grassmannian formulas for them. In the n equals 4 superyagnals case, there seem to be what was true for the planar case seemed to be exactly true for non-planar, despite there is no symmetry derivation or no, we don't know about any other symmetries, but at the level of amplitudes, it seems to be exactly the same thing as planar. So the conjecture would be that there are some hidden symmetries in the full n equals 4 superdiagonals, not only the planar part, but and the amplitude suggests that. In the gravity, the situation is different. So there seems to be some important collinearity conditions which correspond to the IR of gravity and also logarithmic singularities for finite momenta. So this is everything about the IR, which we know that the gravity behaves very well in IR. Here we actually see it at the integrand level, what it means. But at the infinity, which corresponds to UV, where the general wisdom would say that the gravity amplitudes must diverge, despite it's not completely clear in case of n equals 8. We see it at the level of integrand that there are higher poles at infinity. So it's so that's the important thing to know. What is the structure of these poles? We also don't know what are the on-chain diagrams that correspond to these poles at infinity, and what's the relation to UV. Thank you.
So there are several lower loop n equals 8 amplitudes that are known to have maximal transcendentality. Given that you seem to find that these things have these cubic powers in the denominator rather than logarithmic forms, are these special cases where it should reduce in some sense to a logarithmic form?
So the full thing is logarithmic up to three loops. The first multiple poles start at four loops. They are all at infinity, so at finite locations, so I don't know actually how to think about it. Yeah, if you are able to separate the IR and the UV part of amplitudes, I would say that the IR part is uniform transcendental, and the UV part becomes just worse and worse. But you are not normally able to do it in any regulator. Yeah, but if you are able to do it, I would say that. But up to three loops, nothing has higher poles. Even the poles at infinity are single poles. So in that case, I would expect that everything is, that uniform transcendentality would make sense up to three loops. But at four loops, I would be, I don't know. That would be very surprising because there is a double pole at infinity. Yeah.
Actually, I did have another question.
Yeah.
So this is sort of more generic. How far have you checked these things for the non-planar?
So the checks that we did, okay. So for the non-planar Young-Mills, we did two loop 4 point, 5 point. We had to build a new basis of these objects, so and three loop 4 point. So the other things would be just too much effort. It's in principle possible to do three loop 5 point and four loop 4 point, but it was just, well, you can actually check on the current representations in the literature if it is true. Despite term by term, it's not true there. Yeah. For the gravity, so the checks I saw, which I showed for gravity, are only one loop 4 point and two loop 4 point. The problem there is that there, everything, all these properties of the gravity on-shell diagrams cannot be implemented term by term, even at one loop 4 point. It's cancellation after you symmetrize over all labels. Yeah, so it's exactly diagram unfriendly. So checking that in the representation of amplitude in terms of diagrams is exactly, doesn't seem like the right way to go, because you will see massive cancellations everywhere. And unlike in the Young-Mills case, where all these properties we saw could be implemented term by term, unlike, well, the final Jungian symmetry cannot be implemented term by term, because it requires some, the super part is very important there, and that cannot be incorporated term by term in the diagrammatic expansion. But in the gravity case, actually nothing can be incorporated. All these properties are not friendly for diagrams. So we just checked one loop 4 point and two loop 4 point in this case. And it, two loop 4 point is already kind of on the borderline of checking, despite the representation seems very simple, but you have to symmetrize over everything and so on. Yes?
So is that the formula for gravity on on-shell amplitude, that using the Grassmannian formula is also true for non-planar diagrams?
Well, in gravity, there are no planar or non-planar. Everything is on the same footing. Yes. So the formula for the gravity on-shell diagram is just for any on-shell diagram. Yeah, the ones I, well, let me show this one. Yeah, it's for any on-shell diagram. So for each on-shell diagram, you find these parameters, either edge or, well, non-planar is only edge. And then you write this form in terms of them, and then for each vertex, you have some factor in the numerator. And there might be a way how to get rid of these factors and use some auxiliary variables. So in three-point amplitude, there actually exists some fermionic degrees of freedom, which gives you exactly that factor. But even if that exists, the important thing is that the diagram, the form for the diagram is vertex by vertex, there is a factor. Whenever the factor vanishes, the full diagram vanishes. So it seems to be very vertex-oriented. And there is a physical interpretation. This vertex just says that whenever the free momenta in a vertex are proportional, the full diagram vanishes. And as I said, it corresponds to the IR divergences. This is an integrant level understanding why the gravity amplitudes are very mildly IR divergent. But this actually says little more, well, I can say in private, because just the absence of higher IR divergences would give weaker constraint than that. So maybe there is even some more information here that we can learn than just about IR divergences.
So it's not really whether the diagram is
planar or not. No, it's for all. Yeah, and this is the same actually true for the Young-Mills. The Young-Mills is always that, whether it's planar or non-planar. The special thing about planar, and that has nothing to do with the theory, is that the C matrix either has some positivity properties or doesn't. Yeah, in case of planar, if the diagram is planar, we find these variables, we find the C matrix, there is some positivity property of the minors of the C matrix. But that would be true even in gravity, despite the planar sector of gravity is meaningless. And this is just the statement about this delta function. This has nothing to do with the theory. That's there in all theories. And then there is the statement about the theory, which gives you this form. And that's different for Young Gaussian gravity.
So in the case of gravity, you said that there are balls of infinity, and you said that it might be really related to the UV divergence, which I'm not sure. But what would you need to do in order to make that?
So let me say, so the poles at infinity, so even in this, in the beginning, I said this simple case of just looking at the bubble integral and the triangle integral. So in both integrals, there is a pole at infinity. Now, the crucial question, which is very hard to check for the more complicated diagrams, is whether the pole at infinity is in the real plane or complex plane. In the case of bubble integral, it's in the real plane. And once you integrate around that point and you get UV divergence. In case of triangle, it's in the complex plane. You don't integrate there. It's there, but you don't integrate it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in case of the cuts or the full philosophy of the generalized unitarity, it's looking at these complex points. You cut, everything is complex, but from that you get all the information about how the thing behaves in IR. Mm-hmm. In UV, it's important whether it's in the real plane or complex plane. Mm-hmm. So the poles at infinity are definitely there in gravity, but it doesn't immediately mean the UV divergence. You would have to check that the poles at infinity are there in the real plane. If they are there, I don't see any, unless there is some miraculous cancellation non-local between two different places in the integration region. That is possible, but that would be very hard to see how it can happen. But if you can see that there are poles at infinity in the real plane, that would basically almost mean that it's UV divergent. But if you can see that all the poles at infinity are only in the complex plane, I think that that would mean some conspiracy that the amplitude might be finite.
It's not that time, Carol.